Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, hey, great to be. Ladies and gentlemen, Florida's new lieutenant governor is named.
Oh, I muted myself. Sorry about that. All right, Caden, yeah, throw me back on. All right, thanks. Yeah, well, hold that. We're going to hear more from Governor Ron DeSantis in a second there. All right, yeah. So, yeah, that was my mistake there, Caden. So, inside baseball there, I'm, you know, now I'm set up in Whitefish this morning. I broke away from the studio, and now I'm in another remote location here broadcasting from Whitefish this morning. So I muted the wrong feed. I muted myself to try to stop the echo that I was getting, but then I realized, oh, I'm supposed to mute the studio feed, not mute my own feed. So, again, I went to journalism school, not to engineering school. So if you hear some challenges with pushing the right buttons from time to time, there you go. It is what it is. Thankfully, you guys see how quick Caden was, though, man. He was ready to rock and roll. Look at that. He's like, okay, if I lose a feed, I got a backup plan. But yeah, hey, anyway, yeah, here it is. It's Thursday, and so we got the woke update of the week coming up for you here in the next hour. David Noble will be with us for the 7 o'clock hour of the show as I'm broadcasting live from Whitefish, and then we've got a great program lined up for you in the 8 and the 9 o'clock hours of the show. The reason I'm here in Whitefish this morning is the Congressional Western Caucus is here in the Flathead Valley. They've been holding several meetings. If you've been listening to the show, we had the chief of the U.S. Forest Service here. I was able to catch up with him. Later today, I think we've got a few guests already lined up. Who knows who else might show up and join us. I think kicking off the 8 o'clock hour of the show, we're going to have Congressman Tom Tiffany out of Wisconsin. Now, he is an important voice on public lands issues, wolves, Endangered Species Act. He actually chairs the Public Lands Committee back there in the U.S. House of Representatives. So going to be great to catch up with him, see what he's hearing about this week in Montana, and get his Wisconsin viewpoint on it all as well. He and I were talking about wildfire smoke earlier in the week, and he was the one who was like, hey, are you guys chewing on this Canadian wildfire smoke this year, just like we are in Wisconsin? They got it really bad in Wisconsin. I said, oh, yeah, now under this leftist regime in Canada, it's like every year we're chewing on the Canadian wildfire smoke, right? And then great guy, Representative Jim Baird out of Indiana, a Vietnam veteran, looking forward to seeing him and telling him thanks for his service like we do for all of our incredible Vietnam veterans. Thanks to all of you and welcome home to every single one of you Vietnam veterans. And then Representative Ron Estes out of Kansas will also be with us. So, but here's what we got coming up this hour of the show. I played a little bit of the audio in the 9 o'clock hour on Wednesday, but we're going to play more of this conversation. Governor Ron DeSantis introducing his new lieutenant governor, the Scobey, Montana native, Jay Collins. We're going to roll right into that right after this, right here with Montana Talks here in the 6 o'clock hour.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With some sunshine across the area today, high temperature readings push up into the mid-80s. For tonight, we can expect clear skies, low temperatures from the lower 50s in Bozeman, around 60 in Billings. And as we finish out the work week on Friday, we can expect more sunshine with high temperature readings of around 80, staying clear to partly cloudy Friday night. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Securing America.
Wednesday, Vice President J.D. Vance visited some of the National Guard troops now deployed to Washington, D.C. in an effort to curb crime in that city.
Hey, guys, how we doing? Good. Good to see you guys. Thank you.
Saying that the effort, only a week and a half old, is already paying dividends.
We've seen a 35% reduction in violent crime. We've seen over a 50% reduction in robberies.
Discounting protesters shouting in the background as he said that the D.C. effort is truly becoming a proving ground.
You can actually bring law and order to communities. You've just got to have the political willpower to do it.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth also thanking the guardsmen.
It's not a discussion.
While the vice president noted the hope is that all Americans benefit.
You should feel free to come and visit here, have a meal, see all these incredible monuments, and actually enjoy yourself.
Almost 2,000 troops have been deployed from the D.C. National Guard and several other states. Kevin Uretsky, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast's like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Ladies and gentlemen, Florida's new lieutenant governor is named Jay Collins. He's a decorated Green Beret, having served 23 years on active duty, was involved in a lot of campaigns. He earned a lot of military decorations, ranging from the Bronze Star to Legion of Merit. He was also wounded in action and was awarded the Purple Heart. Which, obviously, when you're in special forces, that is kind of the cost of doing business, and that can happen. Somewhat unique about Jay is, he ended up losing one of his legs as a result of his service, and rather than take a medical retirement, which he was entitled to, he decided to re-up and serve five more years as a Green Beret with a prosthetic leg. And he's continued to exude service above self in Florida as a state senator and has been one of our most productive Florida senators. He's also, prior to becoming lieutenant governor, was a leader in a hurricane relief organization that would immediately be there in the aftermath of these major hurricanes, providing food and nutrition for first responders as well as displaced residents. And he even is expeditionary when Florida's doing things overseas, like rescuing people from Israel. You know, he's on the ground doing it and doing it very well. And so you're going to be able to learn a little bit more about him today. So welcome to the executive office of the governor for the first time with you being lieutenant governor.
Well, thank you, Governor. I appreciate it. Pretty exciting couple days here. Thank you for first your trust in the opportunity to do this, and looking forward to this podcast. It'll be good to tell some stories here and fill in some of those blanks.
Well, we did your announcement at this team house in South Tampa, which is basically put together by a bunch of Green Berets, but it's not limited to that. They want it open to all veterans. Right. And so it was suggested that we do it. And I had made the comment when we got there. It's like, this ain't your grandfather's VFW. Not that those are bad. I mean, I love all that. But I mean, this was like really state of the art. I mean, it's a nice TV, beautiful area. But when we were doing the event there, I had a lot of veterans, and you know, I could tell that these are folks that really appreciated what it means to serve in uniform, what it means to sacrifice, and what it means to put your country first. And I think people appreciate when they hear, like, hey, you're in harm's way, you're getting shot at, all this stuff. But there's a lot more sacrifice that goes into it before you even get forward deployed. So talk about when you're in special forces, what's it like to train to be able to get to that point where you become an Army Green Beret?
Well, becoming a Green Beret, when I went through, you didn't have a high school into the Green Berets program. Now, the X-ray program, as that's known now, lets a few people through early on just to fill the ranks out and inject a little youth, a little, more physicality, some young bucks, so to speak, right? When I went through, most of the people have been in 5-6 years. You've been in the Army. You've done very well. You're in the top 2% of your MOS, your job skills. And then you go to selection, SFAS. We used to jokingly call the School for Advanced Suffering. It's a hoot, right? I went through an ice storm class where trees were freezing, breaking, falling on people. It was great. I mean, with God's grace, I was blessed to be selected. I got to be an 18 Delta. I went through the next 2.5, almost 3 years of the Special Forces qualification course to become a Special Forces medic. But that's the easy part. You get there, you get to a team, and now you're kind of in a probationary role. You got 1 year really to prove yourself, show that you can earn it, show that you belong on the team, or you kind of get pushed aside a little bit. And the op tempo is crazy. Everyone hears about the ops, the gunfights, jumping out of planes, all the fun, exciting stuff. What they don't hear about is the things you're alluding to, the hours and hours of training, time at the range, honing your craft, making sure your equipment is pristine, that you understand the area of operation and the area of interest that you're going into, both from a language standpoint, an endemic disease, and a risk factor standpoint, and then just working with your foreign counterparts as you go into some of those missions. The preparation time is incredible. And any time you deploy, you have multiple training iterations before that. So if you're going to be gone for 8 months, you can bet you're going to have probably 30 to 60 days of training prior to that. And then you head to Afghanistan and Iraq, and you come back and you go to South America when I was the 7th group. It's about 3 or 4 months in between. So it's a quick turn. You're doing a lot of things. It's like strapped onto a rocket ship sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, there were Green Berets, I think, came into being after World War II, I think sometime in like the early 50s, Navy SEALs under Jack Kennedy in the early 60s. And, you know, obviously, you know, World War II was our biggest, you know, modern conflict. But then now, kind of in the GWAD era and the post 9/11, I mean, so much is put on the shoulders of special forces. And it's almost like, I think, like, politicians are like, well, we can just send special forces. That doesn't somehow count as deploying. Like, it's only boots on the ground if it's conventional right. forces and not special forces, which I always thought was crazy to say that, but that was kind of the way it was. So you're going, and it's constant deployments, and especially over those years in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's hard enough doing the duty, but then, you know, you have family, you have all these right. other things. And there was a lot of weight that was placed on the shoulders of those folks over those years.
Yeah, Governor, there sure were. And you're hitting a key point. Your family serves alongside you. It is incredibly difficult. It takes an inordinate amount of just pressure and peace and trust from your family and a lot of grace, because there's so many times when you are told with short notice you're going to go to a country, you're not sure when you're going to be back, things are going to change, and the family just has to adapt. You know, your wife and your children end up doing a lot of things without you. You miss a lot of those times. And, you know, that's something we don't talk about enough, frankly. And it's one of those things where I always talk about being quiet or silent. Don't be silent. Talk about these facts. So I'm glad we can do that here. You know, it's tough. You do what you have to do to protect and preserve our country, to take care of our community, the things we love, but what you want to do as a dad and as a husband is be there with your family. But that's the responsibility. That's why our nation is where it is, because good men did what they had to do so their children and family can do what they want to do.
Good pausing point right there. Back right after this.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. The government runs out of money on October 1st. The trick is whether any stopgap spending bill can command 60 votes to break a filibuster in the Senate. At the last spending deadline in March, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer announced he would help Republicans crack the filibuster. Schumer didn't vote yes on the bill itself, but the New York Democrat argued that avoiding a shutdown at that point was better than enduring one under President Trump and Elon Musk, who was then fully empowered at Doge. Progressives excoriated Schumer for not extracting a major concession from President Trump and congressional Republicans. White House Budget Director Russ Vogt says he wants a less bipartisan appropriations process. That's fine. But this is about the math. House Republicans must stick together to pass any spending package there. But the real hurdle is the Senate filibuster. So it's unclear what Schumer could or would demand in order for some Democrats to help break a filibuster. It's simple. If Schumer and the Democrats don't assist, there's a shutdown. And Democrats will expect Schumer to demand a king's ransom for Democratic help. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Hey, we got a big show coming up for you on Thursday's Montana Talks, taking you statewide from 9 to 10 every Monday through Friday right here. Here's what we got coming up Thursday, though. Several members of Congress are in the Flathead Valley of Montana for the Western Congressional Caucus. We'll get a chance to catch up with them, covering all the big topics on Thursday's Montana Talks, live from the Flathead Valley. Send us a message on the Montana Talks app if you got a topic you want to bring up in the meantime.
Put your phone on D&D. That means that you're not disturbed when you're driving and when you're going from point A to B. I need you to stay safe, please, so always sing with me. So put your phone on D&D. That means that you're not disturbed when you're driving and when you're going from point A to B. I need you to stay safe, please, so always remember this beat.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nemitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, this week, livestock producers across the West are following developments out of Montana after the Department of Livestock there confirmed that a bull from a Beaverhead County cattle herd tested positive for brucellosis. Veterinarian Dr. Brene Peterson with the Department of Livestock said that the disease was caught early thanks to Montana's surveillance program and designated surveillance area.
The producers in the DSA, the designated surveillance area, which includes Gallatin County, Park County, most of Madison, and then Beaverhead County, they typically will test their herds for brucellosis most of the time yearly. And then anytime they do move animals outside of the DSA, they do have the requirement to have a test done prior to leaving. This animal had gone through the market, and that is where the test was performed and where we identified it then.
And she says that the disease investigation will include testing and tracing of animal contacts as well as movements to help ensure that brucellosis isn't present in other livestock herds, as well as working with the affected operation to minimize the impact of this diagnosis by conducting a tailored and focused investigation. Now, since 2010, 14 Montana herds have tested positive for brucellosis, with the last case in Madison County in April of 2023. Required testing ensures early detection before livestock move, giving trading partners confidence in Montana cattle. Stay with us. We'll have more ag news right after this.
Have you ever told your agriculture lender about a cheaper interest rate somewhere else and they've met or lowered your rate? Ever wonder why you weren't getting the best rate to begin with? At Montana Livestock, we're not trying to get every dime out of our customer's pocket. As a shareholder-owned company, we prefer modest earnings and happy customers. Work with a lender who strives to see their customers prosper along with the company. Give Montana Livestock a call today at 1-800-332-3405 or check us out on our website, ag-credit.com, and see if we're the change you deserve.
Cattle Producers Cattle Country Videos Frontier Fall Roundup Video Sale is Thursday, September 11th from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Sale takes place at the Cheyenne Frontier Days Event Center. However, deadline for the Frontier Fall Roundup Video Sale is coming up fast. It's Friday, August 22nd. So take advantage of this record-high cattle market and be sure to contact a Cattle Country Video rep in your area to consign, or you can visit Cattle Country Video. Well, U.S. pasture conditions continue to worsen as summer heat reduces quality, especially out here in Western Ag Network country. With more, here's USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
We see the vast number of the western states coming in at a number above that national average. Nevada, pretty small footprint on rangeland pastures, but they're at 90%, very poor to poor. Arizona, 81%, very poor to poor. Some of our bigger agricultural states, Montana this week, 47%, very poor to poor. Also above 40%, Washington, Oregon, Utah, and New Mexico.
Now, other states in our coverage area like Colorado, Wyoming, Nebraska, and Kansas have also seen their pasture conditions decrease here in late summer. And finally, a top U.S. oil trade group is opposing a government proposal to cut incentives for biofuel imports. The criticism, they say, will force the Trump administration to either side with farmers looking to protect and prioritize domestic supplies or refiners chasing cheaper feedstock. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nemitz.
Big topics, big ideas. Big Sky, Montana Talks.
All right, so we're going to go back to the conversation here with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis as he's introducing his new Lieutenant Governor, Jay Collins. And again, the reason we're featuring this here in Montana is because Jay Collins is not only a Green Beret veteran, but he grew up, he was born and raised in Scobey, Montana. So anyway, and then I'll be back here in the 7 o'clock hour broadcasting live from the Congressional Western Caucus here in Whitefish. I'll be back with David Noble, Woke Updates and more in the 7 o'clock hour. But here we go back to the conversation with Governor DeSantis and Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins.
When you to try out for special forces, do you have to be airborne qualified already, or is that after that?
Yeah, so that's depends. You can do it either way.
I was already airborne qualified. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division on Fort Bragg, learning to attest the theory of gravity. I was actually in jump school for 9/11.
Okay.
So,
that's at Fort Benning?
It sure is. I did my first jump on September 10th. Landed, hit the ground, was pretty excited. I didn't die. Wasn't really sure I loved that. September 11th, we flew around in circles. We had no idea the towers had been hit. My wife and I had just gotten married. She was living in D.C., worked at the in and around the security clearance people, the CCF and DSS at the time, and was all over the Pentagon and D.C. and the military district of Washington. And back then, we didn't have cell phones. I couldn't just call her or text her. I didn't know she was okay. It took hours to figure this out. We sat on the tarmac in Georgia in September, just baking. The engines turned off before they would let us clear out.
Wow.
The whole world changed after that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Army, well, any military service, kind of late 90s, it was the U.S. holiday from history.
Yep.
And 9/11 really, really changed that. And, yep. it changed people's lives that were in the uniform services.
Sure did.
Sure. It became real very quickly.
Yeah, we went from an open base where you could just drive and come and go to everything was closed. We were even out there, guarding things with like a mattock handle, like a wooden club, marching around, securing the perimeter of the base. And all of the security things we do now and we know now is normal, they came into being just in such a short time. But eventually we finished jump school. We did our last four jumps, graduated, and I was in the Q course a couple of years later.
So what drove you to join in the first place, and talk a little bit about how you grew up and kind of what led you to this path?
So I was adopted by my grandparents. I was born to a kid, 16-year-old. She didn't know her head from a hole in the ground, wasn't ready to be a parent. And, thank God my grandparents stepped in, my mom and dad. He was a World War II era, veteran, loved our country unconditionally, never talked about anything. He just knew where he stood because he led by example. He just did what needed to be done. Didn't ask for credit. Grew up on a farm. We ended up losing our farm coming out of the 80s. It was hard, The economy was in the tanks. Bad government is bad government in any state, right? And we saw that there. We just couldn't afford to live. And moved in, and eventually I went off to college, played a couple of years of ball. Rec my knee, wasn't really fast anymore. So I thought I'll join the Army for a few years. I always wanted to do it. My dad, my grandfather inspired me to do so. And I thought, you know what? I see how this fits, and I fell in love with it. I really did. Just the ability to be around people who are like-minded, driving you forward for excellence in each and everything you do. I just kept volunteering for thing after thing after thing. I started off as an intelligence analyst. I thought it was going to be James Bond. It was not James Bond. It was a building with no windows buried in the dirt. But quickly, that led me to Fort Bragg, and I actually got deployed forward at the beginning of the War on Terror to work with the Joint Interagency Task Force in Tampa at MacDill Air Force Base. I got to see Green Berets for the first time, some of the guys in some of our special mission units working interagency ops for the first time. I was like, holy cow, I think I know what I want to do when I grow up, finally. It's taken a minute. And came back from that, went to selection a couple weeks later, and been volunteering ever since.
Now, talk about your current family life. I know your wife, Layla, is also a 20-year military veteran. So I take it you guys met in the Army?
We did. I was actually living in the United Kingdom. I was working one of my last positions in the intel community in a combined joint intelligence center called the Joint Analysis Center in Molesworth in the United Kingdom. Not really sure how that came to be. Didn't even know we had people in England when I got assigned there, but we were at a school in Fort Huachuca, Arizona, ran off to Vegas, got married, kid you not, and are married now. We have two beautiful boys, 13 and 10. Gabe is 13, Colt's 10, and it's what we do. But what's interesting is she's a 20-year veteran. She was a counterintelligence agent, the very best of what she did. Now, we both had the opportunity to serve in special missions units. That's pretty unique. Independently, but as a family with young kids, it's kind of strange. You got a counter intel mom who's special mission unit trained, and a Green Beret dad who's special mission unit trained, and ultimately you got to feel sorry for them. Their game's got to get pretty strong. They don't get away with a lot in our household, but we're teaching them what matters. But the thing I like to tell people is, when I got hurt in Afghanistan, it was 2007 that I got shot, did surgery on myself. Got hit by a mortar later on. It was a really bad trip, I guess. And went through about 7 years of limb salvage. And then in 14, we got to the point where my leg wasn't working. I couldn't walk. I couldn't run. I couldn't jump. I was in a brace up to my hip called the IDEO. And I was still operating. I was still operating as a Green Beret. I was still trying to keep my place. And the pain was just miserable. Hard to function. Went, got my leg cut off, and rehabbed the Walter Reed. And my wife was at the tail end of her career. You know, she sacrificed her career, raised me up, sacrificed it for our family because we couldn't have done it if she hadn't done that. She sacrificed what she was the very best at in this U.S. Army Special Operations. She was the senior Special Operations counter-intel agent. That's a big deal. Very, very good at what she did. She sacrificed that to get us up, get me on my foot, and get our kids moving forward because we had some health struggles with our little guy. We had just gone through this. We were trying to do IVF and IUI, and we were trying to figure out why our son was throwing up 10, 12, you know, 14 times a day. And she said, enough's enough. I'm going to take care of my family. So that's something that I think has to be talked about more and more and more. It's incredible. You know, you hear the saying, behind every successful man is an even stronger, more dynamic woman. And, you know, your wife, Casey, is incredible. She is. She is just, she's a force of nature. Layla's the same way. She is the kind of person you fight wars for.
And so you, you know, you guys obviously both served admirably. You obviously have the scars to show it. You guys come back to Florida and, you know, a few years later, you know, you get into the political realm. So, you know, what caused you to want to run for political office?
Well, let's actually hold it right there, Caden, if we can. Yeah, let's hold it right there. Yeah, fascinating to listen in on this conversation while I'm here doing my show prep from Whitefish for the Congressional Western Caucus program that we got lined up for you. This is Jay Collins, Green Beret veteran. What an incredible story he and both he and his wife have here. And when he talks about losing the farm, you know, that's Scobie, Montana, when he talks about back in the 80s there that you're hearing. We're going to have more of this conversation with Governor DeSantis and Jay Collins coming up right after this.
We treasure most.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right. Yeah, Aaron Flint here, broadcasting from the Congressional Western Caucus here in Whitefish this morning. You know, it's kind of funny. I've been getting some emails. I've been getting some folks saying, hey, I hear you are broadcasting live from Radio Row at the Congressional Western Caucus. Well, there is a Radio Row. And this show is the Radio Row. This is it. We are the only ones here broadcasting live. So we got some great content coming up for you here this morning. But first, and then, of course, David Noble with our weekly woke update of the week, the Trump W of the week, and more. Always great to catch up with David Noble. He's going to be with us here in about 20 minutes. But first, here we go back to the conversation here. This incredible interview with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Scobie, Montana native, and now Florida Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins. Here you go.
You know, you guys obviously both served admirably. You obviously have the scars to show it. You guys come back to Florida and, you know, a few years later, you know, you get into the political realm. So, you know, what caused you to want to run for political office?
Well, I will tell you, I have been asked many, many times, and my answer was always the same, no, I don't want to run and get into politics. I want to go run a business. I want to go do something else. I want to serve in another way. And then I realized coming off of COVID, where, again, we led in this state, and coming off of Afghanistan, we were getting calls from interpreters, people we had worked with. It was heartbreaking. And to see that failure of epic proportions, us, you know, turning our back, when the Biden administration turned their back on our allies, left people behind, it was special operators who were getting calls from people we had bled with, fought beside, and it's tough. And I realized right then and there you had a couple of options. You could sit there and complain, or you could get involved and do something. And then I got called up by my son. You know, it's one of those magic moments when your son uses your words against you. We have a rule in my household, don't whine. I really hate whining. It's an Army thing, I guess, a military thing. You know, come right or don't come at all. Come with a solution, submit your solution, and let's talk through this. And he said, Dad, you're whining. What are you going to do about it? So obviously, as a dad, I was like, holy cow, he listened. Awesome. But I was pretty frustrated. I failed to live up to my own ethos, my own thought process, and my own standards. So I started calling people in Congress, jumped in and decided to use my special skills, to quote Liam Neeson, the military gave me those, and started making a connection. And then, as luck would have it, as you know, God's will, we got to connect, and we had the opportunity to move into this seat and run for state senate, the seat that I just vacated, and serve our community in such a dynamic way. You know, it's something that I think we have to talk about more. As veterans, we don't want to run towards politics. We really don't. But when our politicians fail, when our academics fail, who is it that steps up and leads? It's the working class. It's the warrior class. It's people who understand what truly matters, what it is we're fighting for. They step up and lead, and it's no different.
So we had a battle earlier this year on illegal immigration. I called a special session of the legislature in the aftermath of President Trump's election victory. And we really wanted to come out guns blazing when he took office. We were going to have the strongest immigration policy in the country to help the federal government with this really significant thing to remove illegal aliens from our country. And the Speaker of the House, when I called the session, rejected it. He said it was premature. He said it wasn't necessary. He said there was no urgency in the situation. Obviously, he got a lot of backlash from that from Republican voters, but they ended up creating this piece of legislation that really would kneecap the state's ability to help enforce immigration laws. But, you know, when the Speaker's pushing it, you know, a lot of the members of the House and even some of the Senate, you know, kind of was like falling in line initially. And I think you stood up from the beginning with that. There were a handful of senators who said, no, this is not good. This is a de facto amnesty bill. So walk me through kind of, you know, that and why, you know, us winning that fight was so important for Florida.
So it is. It was a dynamic situation, one that, frankly, we were all a little surprised to have to go through here in the state of Florida. Ultimately, we pride ourselves in getting things done. When you talk to leaders from other states, they look to us to be at the very forefront of good policy, solving problems for our country. I call us the conservative proving grounds of America. We truly are. When Florida leads, America wins. So when this happened and you started seeing the pushback, that it's not urgent, it's not something that's important right now, let's go finish off the things we have planned and we'll come back to it. One of the things I know as a veteran and as a service member and someone who's seen a lot of things, and I know you saw the same stuff downrange, tomorrow's not guaranteed. We cannot guarantee what tomorrow is going to bring. We can't waste that time and stand idly by and hope that things are going to be lined up appropriately. So let's take the time when we have it, act, get that language done, and then continue to move forward. So obviously I wanted to step there and get the bill done. Let's put it in place. And, you know, we filed bills at that point, and it didn't happen. You know, everything got a little wonky, and we had to come back again and do this. But when you look at the bill that came out, the Trump Act, as it was originally written, we read the bill. And when you read something and it functionally tells you we're going to catch illegal immigrants, we're going to release them on recognizance, just stop and think about what you're saying. You're going to catch and release. Well, that's a real problem. We're not taking Florida back 10 years. We're not going to do that. We are not going to regress and allow our state to become some sort of state sanctuary. That's not the place. This isn't how we do things. And, you know, we had to dig in. And one of the things I know is that if you're not willing to stand alone, you're probably in the wrong spot when it comes into politics, especially in this state.
Were you surprised, though, that the House leadership did that? Because I know, you know, you had been, you know, here prior to that session, and, you know, we were doing historic conservative wins across the board, and even on immigration. I mean, you know, prior to me being governor, they allowed sanctuary cities. We banned sanctuary cities. You know, we said no driver's licenses or ID cards for illegals, no in-state tuition. You know, we took care of a lot of this stuff, and people realized, hey, you know, our voters want illegal immigration dealt with. They don't want benefits. They don't want any of this. They want to deter it. And then obviously we need the federal government to come in and help remove. And that was clearly a signature issue for President Trump against the Biden-Harris. And you have this once-in-a-generation opportunity to all be on the same page, working in concert with a friendly administration in Washington. And to see that, you know, it surprised me because Florida, as you said, had been the place people looked to for leadership, and we had produced more wins by far than any other state. But I think what it showed me is, you know, in this town and others, some of these insiders, all the Florida success people talk about, they actually don't. They would rather go back to being a purple state. They do not necessarily want to be bold, and especially on illegal immigration. And so I think it was eye-opening for some of the voters, the Republican voters, to see this and to say, wait a minute, you have the biggest supermajority you've ever had in the Florida House of Representatives, and you're rejecting the governor's call to be strong on illegal immigration in favor of legislation that eliminates our current operations. Right. You know, we're stopping Haitians and stuff on boats, and that's all being done. And it actually said that was sunsetted by eliminating the state of emergency. So I think it was very eye-opening. But I think that was a really important inflection point in this state's history that we were able to get it done. And now you see what we're doing with all the great operations going on.
Well, if you look at this, just the lens of history, how often do you have a Republican president who's willing to step forward and act, first off? Hasn't really happened to have someone who's just hitting the ground moving with that kind of aggression and have a state that is primed to sit and lead, and they just sit in their hands and just opt to take a slow roll and put in really weak language that to your point, rolls us back and gets rid of the current operations we're already doing. We were all gobsmacked, to be honest with you, the 2 years prior. And, you know, I was in the Senate for 3 years, right? So that's my track record on this. And ultimately, I was shocked. I expected that we were going to sit down, hammer through this, get this thing done, and continue to lead. You don't get moments like this. You know, having seen and served downrange with many presidential offices calling the shots, it was interesting to see the dynamic shifts and to have somebody who wants to partner, who is pushing the state of Florida, like, yes, we want to do this. This is what should be done. You're stepping forward and leading. To have that moment in time and then to watch it pass by to, frankly, play politics wasn't acceptable. It wasn't something we should do.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lesson for folks to know what lurks under the surface here sometimes. Another issue that's getting a lot of play nationally that we dealt with years ago is the purchase of farmland by the Chinese Communist Party. So, you know, I said we should not have CCP or linked entities be able to buy farmland, but also land your military bases, critical infrastructure. So I called for this to be done, and you were the one that got it done. So talk a little bit about the bill to ban the CCP from buying Florida land.
Yeah.
All right, let's actually pause it right there. Once again, yeah, thanks, Caden, for this is going to be a very interesting response here. Obviously, this has been a big issue here in Montana. Also, the communist Chinese buying farmland, especially near our nuclear missile silo site. So more of the conversation with Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida and his Scobie, Montana native new lieutenant governor, Green Beret, Jay Collins, right after this.
Turn up your radio. Here's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
And you saw the people in Iran beginning to rise up because they were sick and tired of living under these, you know, rigid mullahs in Iran and these rigid rules that were put in place. Anyway, to fast forward, we have a group of reformers now inside of Iran. They're calling for Iran to suspend their uranium enrichment program. In other words, give up their nuclear ambition. Why? Because they want to reach a deal with the U.S. to ease sanctions on the country as they face widespread power and water shortages. And they're struggling financially, and their people are beginning to struggle. And if they continue to struggle, usually the outcome of such a struggle ends up with some type of new government taking over. That's kind of similar to what happened in the Cold War.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. You know, I've been buying precious metals. Somebody gave me great advice. I'm so grateful every day that I did, and I've been doing it for decades. Every paycheck I get, no matter what, I put aside a portion of money to diversify into precious metals. Now, especially during uncertain times, remember the 2008 financial crisis. Who do I choose to make my gold and silver purchases with? What company do I now use? Who do I trust? Well, I've been partnering with a great company for 3 years. I am a customer. The company's called Gold Co. Gold Co. will send you right now a free 2025 gold and silver kit to learn more about diversifying with precious metals. Now, this kit from Gold Co. has been a huge help to me. I think you'll learn a valuable lesson. You'll also learn about their unlimited bonus silver offer. You're not going to want to miss out. All you have to do is call, no obligation, 855-815-GOLD, or just go to HannityGold.com. That's 855-815-GOLD, or go to the website HannityGold.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With some sunshine across the area today, high temperature readings push up into the mid-80s. For tonight, we can expect clear skies, low temperatures from the lower 50s in Bozeman to around 60 in Billings. And as we finish out the work week on Friday, we can expect more sunshine with high temperature readings of around 80, staying clear to partly cloudy Friday night. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Look, I hate to break the news to some of you, but you got a lot of people talking about a sales tax. But look, a sales tax will not solve the property tax problem. A sales tax has not and will not get the support of the people of Montana. If you ask me, I'll tell you why. Go to MontanaTalks.com. Plus, Evelyn Pyburn from the Big Sky Business Journal weighs in with her thoughts as well. We tell you why it won't work, why it can't work, MontanaTalks.com.
Hi, Mom.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Before we get back to the rest of this conversation here, with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Jay Collins, his Scobie, Montana native lieutenant governor, just got sworn in here about a week or so ago. Hey, you guys are here, and I'm in Whitefish today. You know, I got out on Flathead Lake on Sunday, but I'll tell you what, no matter where you're listening at right now across Montana, I'll tell you what, man, getting out on the water, getting out on a lake, getting out on the river, getting out in the outdoors. That's why we live in Montana, right? I know what some of you are thinking. You're like, man, Aaron, I don't have a pontoon boat yet. I don't have a boat. I don't have a camper yet. Well, get down and see our friends at Brett's RV and Marine. They've got great locations, Billings, Butte, and also in Missoula as well. So several locations across the state that you can get in and see. And great folks, family owned. My wife went to high school with one of the Brett's boys. We know Dustin Brett's really well, of course. He does great things. And his whole team, Aaron Brown, they take care of our troops, support veterans programs. Great operation. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, if you want to get outdoors, they've got the largest inventory of boats and RVs in a five-state area. So it's a Montana company with the largest inventory in a five-state area. If you don't want to just stop in at one of their locations, check them out also at brettsrv.com, brettsrv.com. All right, we'll do a couple more minutes here of this conversation. I think Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was just asking Jay Collins about, you know, the communist Chinese trying to buy farmland and the communist Chinese trying to buy land near our missile or our military bases here as well in Florida, like Montana, pushed forward legislation to stop that. Here we go back to it with Jay Collins.
Another issue that's getting a lot of play nationally that we dealt with years ago is the purchase of farmland by the Chinese Communist Party. I said we should not have CCP or linked entities be able to buy farmland, but also land near military bases, critical infrastructure. So I called for this to be done, and you were the one that got it done. So talk a little bit about the bill to ban the CCP from buying Florida land.
Well, something I learned in the military, and this may seem very simple and binary, but I think sometimes we overcomplicate Rice Krispies. We make really simple things complex in government. When your enemy says something, you should take them serious. You really should. China is on a new 1,000-year march, right? They want to be the economic, military, and industrial leaders across the planet. They have made that bold statement. And when they're saying that, and we know they're buying farmland all across our nation, especially farmland and land near our key infrastructure, our power, our water, our military bases, we better take that threat, that inherent threat that they're stating, completely seriously. So what I know is this: the collection abilities and the capabilities that are out there, the tools that that were being utilized by the CCP when I was still active duty, that's 7.5 years ago, 8 years ago, I guess, whatever now, it's gone generations beyond that. It moves so incredibly fast. And for us not to take that moment when we had it to secure our farmland, to secure our critical infrastructure around our power, our water, our military installations would have been a complete and abject failure. And what's great is to see how many states have gotten in line behind us. And that's something that I think our founding fathers were very focal on and very, we obviously discussed in terms of how this should be done. Should states lead? Should the federal government lead? It's good to see the states come together on good policy and push it forward to the federal government. And that's what we did here in Florida. We influenced state by state across the country and made a difference.
And then another issue that, you know, I think last decade there was a lot of frustration among Second Amendment advocates for some of the legislation that had come out of the Florida legislature signed by the previous governor. When I came in, you know, there were still some impulses to try to even do gun control. I said, no. You know, we need to stop, you know, the restricting Second Amendment rights is a mistake. And I opposed that when it was happening. I wasn't governor yet, so I couldn't stop it. But, you know, we need to expand Second Amendment rights. And we did a lot of things leading up to the constitutional carry debate. And so that was something.
All right, we'll hold it right there once again. Yeah, that full, if you want to hear more, we've got that full video posted at MontanaTalks.com. David Noble, next hour. Stand by.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights. Speaking in public? The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.